Welcome to Words to Live By, a podcast series hosted by the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute. Each week, we will share some of the wit and wisdom of Ronald Reagan. In essence, Words to Live By, made up of radio addresses and speeches he delivered from the 1960s through the 1980s. President Reagan's courage as a leader, skill as a diplomat, and his willing to confront communism around the world played a major role in ending the domination of the Soviet Union. He developed and applied with constant purpose a strategy not simply to contain communism, but to end it. And he achieved this goal across much of the globe. Ronald Reagan entered the White House determined to restore the strength of the U.S. military. He insisted on military might not for its own sake, but to discourage threats to American interests, defend freedom around the world, and bring the Soviet Union to the bargaining table. So, in January 1983, 40 years ago this month, he faced the press, holding a news conference to clarify his position on strategic arms reduction. In this podcast, we'll focus on his resolve to clearly define, in his words, what his intentions were. To provide context, the leader of the Soviet Union at the time was Yuri Andropov. Gorbachev would not enter the scene for over 2 years. Also, this news conference preceded the Evil Empire speech and his speech on SDI, his Strategic Defense Initiative, by 2 months. What inspired Reagan to make a statement and face the press was the simple fact that after 2 years as president, America's military strength was coming back, and our 40th president felt he could at last negotiate from a position of strength. Let's start with his opening statement.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a statement here, but before I begin, I just want to explain the subject of this. There has been such disarray, approaching chaos in the press corps with regard to the subject of arms control, that I thought before you unraveled into complete disorder, that maybe we should straighten out the entire subject. So before taking your questions, I'll express a thought or two which are a matter of deep conviction for me with regard to arms control. These concern what we must do before we can expect to be successful, and then what principles ought to guide us in our negotiating strategy. First, it seems to me that the two factors are essential to success in arms control are leverage and determination. With respect to leverage, it's clear that when I arrived in office, there was virtually no hope that we could expect the Soviets to bargain seriously for real reductions. After all, they had all the marbles. We hadn't designed a new missile in 15 years. We hadn't built a new submarine in the same period, although they'd built more than 60. Our bombers were older than the pilots who flew them. Today, that's no longer the case. Working with the Congress, we have in the past 2 years succeeded in getting authorization for a complete modernization of the triad of strategic forces, with the exception of the MX, which still requires congressional action this spring. My point is that now we're in a position to get somewhere, and I'm determined that we shall. The other quality I mentioned was determination. Recently, I've made a few management changes so that we'll have a streamlined team in place through which we can reach decisions promptly and get results in the Geneva talks. I want to say something else about my strategy toward arms control. It seems to me that if you look back over the history of the past 15 years of talks, certain things emerge. Frankly, some things have worked and others have not. Let me be specific. Some people have argued that we ought to try unilateral disarmament, that we should cut our own systems without getting anything from them in return, in the hope that our example will lead the Soviets to cut theirs. That approach has been tried on a number of occasions. For example, President Carter decided to cut the B-1 bomber, perhaps in the expectation that the Soviets would cut back on their bomber programs. It didn't work. Instead of cutting back, the Soviets went steadily ahead with the Backfire and another advanced bomber. On the other hand, some things have worked. Most of you recall that in the late 60s, President Johnson tried very hard to engage the Soviets in talks on anti-ballistic missile systems. At the time, we had no deployment planned. In short, no leverage. The Soviets refused to talk. But then the United States decided to go ahead with an ABM plan. And you know the rest. When it became clear that we would go ahead with the deployment, the Soviets came to the table, and we got a treaty that still endures today. The lesson is that they will bargain when they have an incentive. And today that incentive exists, and I'm convinced that we can make real progress. It is with this thought in mind that I had an in-depth meeting yesterday on arms control with some of my arms control advisors. Next week, I'll be meeting with Ambassador Ed Rowney and Paul Nitzel. We're ready, and I'm confident that with determination, we can succeed. Keeping in mind our commitment to the security of Europe and to peace, and in order to ensure the closest possible coordination with our European allies on arms reductions and deterrence, I've asked Vice President Bush to go to Europe for talks with my European counterparts. And while he's there, the Vice President will meet with the Pope, Prime Minister Thatcher, Chancellor Kohl, President Mitterrand, Prime Minister Fanfani, Prime Minister Martins, and Prime Minister Lubbers, as well as with our negotiating teams in Geneva. And let there be no doubt, we're ready. We'll consider every serious proposal, and we have the determination to succeed in this, the most important undertaking of our generation.
So now, let's begin with the questions from the press corps and hear how our 40th president handled their queries.
Now, any of you have questions on this subject, I think we should dispose of those first.
President, do you think it would be good to have a summit meeting with Andropov first to try to nail down what they're really proposing now, what all these new proposals mean, and are you ready for such a summit?
No, I think that since the talks are supposed to begin early in February, the first week of February, and General Rowney and Ed Nitzel are prepared to go there, I think that takes place first, and we see then what that might lead to, or if there is a need for such a meeting. Questions on the same subject?
Well, sir, I have a question on one of the things you mentioned, the subject of disarray, if I may. Mm-hmm. There is a perception, Mr. President, that the disarray is here in the White House, that you have been out of touch, that you have had to be dragged back by your staff and friends on Capitol Hill to make realistic decisions on the budget. There was even a newspaper column saying that your presidency is failing. Would you address yourself to this perception?
Yes, that's why I came in to point out to you accurately where the disarray lies. It's in those stories that seem to be going around because they are not based on fact. And I would suggest that sometimes in the you get some unnamed source information that any of us here in the White House would be willing to help you out by giving you an answer as to whether that information is correct or not.
Well, sir, specifically on the business of your staff, the stories that your staff and your friends, such as Senator Laxalt, have had to sort of drag you back from an economic game plan that was failing. Well, was it your decision to make these turns that we hear about toward new taxes, toward perhaps a different approach to cutting the budget and defense matters?
Maybe the problem is that what we're doing is a little bit new to Washington. I said from the very beginning that we had a cabinet-type government as I'd had in Sacramento, that we had a cabinet that was chosen for their ability and their knowledge and not because they controlled delegates at a convention or something, and that I would seek advice and every kind of viewpoint in arriving at decisions. Now, we've been doing that, and it's been working very well. And it is true that I ask and want to hear differing viewpoints on things. But then I make the decisions. And this has been working very well. And we've had a very heavy agenda for the last few weeks. We've been working long hours on a number of things that are before us here. And as I say, we had a very serious and a long meeting yesterday on this particular subject, but now we're getting too far away from the general subject.
We'll get back on track on the subject of strategic arms reduction right after this brief message.
The Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation is the nonprofit organization created by President Reagan himself and specifically charged by him with continuing his legacy and sharing his principles: individual liberty, economic opportunity, global democracy, and national pride. We must remain vigilant and work together to share these conservative principles with younger generations. Your role is critical to move our mission forward. Thank you for your continued support. Please visit reaganfoundation.org/give. That's reaganfoundation.org/give.
Now, let's recall a few basic Reagan principles before we listen to a bit more of this press conference. And by the way, they too get back on track to discuss strategic arms reduction. Remember that Ronald Reagan came to the leadership of the free world with a new strategy for securing peace and transcending communism. His vision included rebuilding America's military might, fearlessly pointing out the evils of communism, promoting democracy, and reaffirming America's moral leadership on the international stage, ending the policy of containment and supporting freedom fighters to roll back communism around the world, protecting the American people through the Strategic Defense Initiative, and the reduction and eventual elimination of the threat of nuclear weapons through face-to-face diplomacy and improved communication. With those principles in mind, let's hear the press ask about the president's realistic expectations, the abundance of leaks from the White House, and budget challenges.
Yeah, please do.
By the time your first term is over, you know what your hope is, but do you really think by the time your first term is over that we will have an arms reduction
I think it'd be unwise for anyone, knowing the history of the some 19 attempts by this country to bring about arms reduction and control with the Soviet Union in the past, to make a prediction or put a time limit of any kind on this. I will say this: we will stay at a table negotiating as long as there is any chance at all of securing arms reduction, because it is the most important problem facing this generation.
Sir, could you comment on reports that have circulated in recent days that sometime after the German elections, you might explore alternatives to your zero option you're starting with?
No, and here you're getting dangerously into an area that can't be open to discussion, which is the tactics of negotiating. And the strategy of negotiating. If you discuss that openly, then there is no strategy, and you've tied your hands with regard to attaining anything.
Right. Mr. President, you mentioned in your opening statement the MX missile. During the campaign, when you ran for office, you repeatedly ridiculed former President Carter for his failed efforts to get an MX basing plan and get the program going. How has your experience been any different than his? And how could you say that your efforts have been any more successful than his?
Well, now, if you'll forgive me, my criticism mainly was I was in great disagreement with his plan, not a failure to get it. I just did not believe, and from the counsel and advice that I sought and was able to get, I did not believe that such a plan was practical, or that it would in any way result in more security for the weapon system.
Mr. President, a lot of the criticism which you referred to earlier when we talked about disarray has centered around the fact that perhaps you've overpromised the recovery of the economy. And much of what's been written in recent days has centered on that when they talked of disarray. And you seem to have changed your position by being described in articles as willing to think about taxes in the out years if they're needed to bring down the deficit. All of that has contributed to this. Do you think that's unfair?
I have and will continue to say that there are still decisions to be made. We've made great progress with regard to the budget plan. I do not believe that philosophically I have changed at all. But I'm not prepared to discuss that, and we now have left this other subject, and we should get back to it.
I was coming back to this one, sir.
Well, no, I think that, again, this has been very inaccurate. Things that are only options being presented and on which there has been no decision, and as I say, I've asked for the widest range of options, and then I suddenly see them announced as rumored that I have made decision or I've decided on this or I'm willing to go this way or not. That is where, as I say, the leaks have been very inaccurate, and I would I just don't think you should place so much confidence
in
them.
Sir, may I follow that for a second? Since the policy on leaks was announced on Monday, the Secretary of Treasury put on record or on background virtually all of the tax measures that are being considered for the new budget. The Secretary of Defense said on television that there would be a military and civilian pay freeze. The details are open. And the Associate Attorney General revealed on the record your decision to veto the crime and one of the wilderness bills. All in all, sir, it's been a very good week for leaks and for reporters. Does this really serve any purpose?
The difference is that you were able to identify every one of those people. They didn't come and appear in your newscast or in print as an unidentified high White House source.
But that's where the perception of you seeming to change your stand, a part of it comes from.
Well, I haven't seen the exact words of some of those statements, but I would suggest that maybe they were trying to explain away the misstatements or the assumptions that had been made.
Excuse me, Mr. President.
Gee, I thought for a minute I'd lost my job.
In addition to the secretaries, Secretary Regan, Secretary Weinberger, others have spoken publicly. The Joint Chiefs of Staff spoke publicly about your defense cuts and said that they would have preferred the cuts to be in weapon systems, not in pay and personnel that would actually hurt readiness. Doesn't this contribute to the appearance that you have backed down on your defense buildup and on your commitment not to hurt the readiness?
No, there has been, as the Secretary admitted, that there might be some slight stretching out of our readiness preparations, but we have already achieved great gains in those, so it isn't as if we were starting from scratch on that. But our preference was not to delay or set back the weapons buildups that we need in order to close the window of vulnerability. And at the same time, may I say that we think with our arms control talks, we're creating a window of opportunity here. But no, we haven't retreated from our position on that. I myself would have preferred to not have to make those. We're facing reality with what we're going to present in a budget to the Congress and what we believe can meet our problems, then it would be acceptable to Congress.
And you don't agree that your presidency is failing, do you?
No, and I looked at the record, and as a matter of fact, I got out some of the printings of at least some of your groups this morning about campaign promises that I'd made, and this was printed before I took office, and we have either succeeded in keeping them or have made an effort to keep them and still been frustrated by the majority party in the House, but we've made a solid effort to get every one of these things. But I would like to, just leaving now, no more time for no more questions, but I just would like to get your minds back to this, because I think this is so important, that our allies should not be, from the things that they read, be concerned about whether we're lacking in determination or whether we are indeed in disarray. We're not. That's all been explained away, and it's in here in the statement that we're simply streamlining the management.
Thank you for listening. For more information on the Ronald Reagan Presidential Foundation and Institute, including information on how to become a member, information on upcoming exhibits at the Reagan Library, and more information on the legacy of President Reagan, please visit ReaganFoundation.org. And don't forget to like and follow the Reagan Foundation on all social media platforms.
Don't forget to subscribe to the Words to Live By podcast in your iTunes or Google Play stores and on other podcast platforms as they become available. New episodes of Words to Live By come out every Tuesday. Like what you hear? Check out our A Reagan Forum podcast featuring great speeches delivered at the Reagan Library. New episodes drop every Thursday. And don't forget to follow at Ronald Reagan on Facebook, at Ronald Reagan 40 on Twitter, and Reagan Foundation on YouTube. Also, search for us on SoundCloud and Stitcher.